Blog Talk Radio.
Think big. ThinkBigRadio.com for all of your realty, business, financial, entertainment, and networking needs. We'd like to thank you all for your continued support and spreading the word about ThinkBigRadio.com. Have you spread the word today? Hello, ThinkBigRadio.com listeners. Big here, your host tonight, along with Gloria. Gloria, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you?
I'm doing very fine, Gloria. Glad to hear that lovely voice of yours on here letting our airwaves know that you're still out there. We have a great guest tonight. The guest is going to introduce herself right now. Guest, are you there?
Yes, I am.
And can you state your name?
Yes, my name is Patricia Neely Dorsey. I'm the author of a new book, Reflections of a Mississippi Magnolia, A Life in Poems.
Okay, Patricia, we would like for you to get out all of your contact information. How can we reach you?
Okay, you can find some of my poetry and how to order the book on www.blackplanet.com/Patricia Neely Dorsey 3. And to order the book, www.reeds.ms/books.asp.
Okay, great. I hope all of our big thinkers and big listeners out there have just received that contact information. So let's get this interview started. Gloria, do you want to take over?
Oh, I'll let you go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, well, the first thing we'd like to know is exactly where are you from, Patricia?
Tupelo, Mississippi, the birthplace of Elvis Presley.
Oh, wow. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about your past and where you came from as far as where you are today?
Well, I grew up here in Tupelo, Mississippi. I went to school in Boston, at Boston University in Boston, Massachusetts. I received a BA in psychology from there. I lived in Memphis for 20 years working in the mental health and criminal justice system, and I just recently moved back home to Tupelo in 2007, August 2007. And my book was published in February 2008.
So what made you decide to write a book about growing up in Tupelo, Mississippi?
Well, it was not a conscious decision. Believe it or not, I wrote my very first poem February the 14th, 2007. I just woke up in the morning with this poem swirling around in my head. And I was like, is that something that I read or is something that, you know, I was thinking about? And I figured out that it was an original poem. So I just jotted it down, and the name of it was Our Place. That was my first poem, and it just came to me from beginning to end, the title and everything. And after that date, the poems just kept flowing. They just kept coming, two and three at a time every day. And then one of my friends was telling me, God, these are really good. You need to do something with them. And I really wasn't, you know, it was just a personal thing, just writing them down. And a year later, I have a book. I mean, my first poem was written February 14th, 2007, and my book came out February 22nd, 2008. Almost 1 year from the day that I wrote my first poem.
Now, that was, if I can recall, isn't February 14th Valentine's Day?
Yes, it is.
So what type of mood were you in when you woke up that morning? And
absolutely. It had to be romantic. I must have gone to sleep thinking about romance. I know I've been reading some books about some romantic things, and then I woke up, and there it was. It was just a really nice love poem. And all of them aren't really love poems. Most of them turned out to be things about my childhood and growing up and my love for the South and Mississippi, because there's so many negative connotations about Mississippi and the South in general. And I just wanted to give people a flip side of the coin. There's a lot to love about the Southern way of life. And people, you know, there are a lot of negative things that are out there. And I just wanted to show them something different.
Wow, that's great. Now, how about, will you be able to share maybe a couple of your poems with us this
evening?
Please,
absolutely.
Okay.
Now, can I do that?
Yeah, that wouldn't be a problem at all. We can maybe get you to do one or two later on in the show, or
okay,
right after we do our commercial break.
Okay.
That would be nice.
Yes.
Lopia, I noticed that she mentioned a couple of things about her degree and also working throughout the criminal justice system. Did you want to ask
yes.
her any questions relating to that?
Now, would you ever decide to just put that down and just go full-time in poetry, or are you going to try to do both?
Well, that's what I'm doing right now. I haven't done anything for the past year but write and promote the book.
Okay.
When I moved from Memphis, basically I just started with the book thing, and I've been promoting it. It's been going very well on a local level, but I want to get it out. You know, that's the purpose of it. I want to get it out to the world because we know what we love about the South down here, but we want other people to know, you know, the wonderful things about it.
Wow.
Okay, so basically what you're trying to say is you're trying to enlighten people about the South. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I mean, it wasn't my purpose in writing the book, but now it is my purpose in promoting the book because, like I said, all the poems just really, I didn't make up not one single poem, and I wrote that in the foreword of my book. I didn't make up any of them. They just came to me, and it just took me maybe 2 or 3 minutes or 5 minutes to write them down. So it wasn't a conscious effort of how they came about. And there are like 75 poems in the book, and from within 1 year's time, I've written over 500 poems, I know.
Okay, so once you do this book, your book is already completed, and once you get it,
yes.
everything, get it out there, will you be doing another book?
Absolutely. I have two other ones already ready, but I need to try to get this one out there, get it going. I got a real hot and steamy one coming up, The Secret Garden of Love.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about that one?
Well, it's just love poems and very sensual love poems about a woman's love for a man.
Okay.
Okay, so I understand that this next one is also poetry, but it's just love poetry.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's all poetry. I haven't written any kind of novels or anything, fiction or anything like that. And I mean, I always just consider myself a writer, never a poet, really. Like I said, I'm in awe of people who can sit down and make up these things. I never did that. And I'm just in awe of people who do that. And I wrote that in the foreword of my book also, that I hesitate to call myself a poet. And people, you know, with all the newspaper articles, every time I look at them and they say, poet has a sign in here, poet has a sign in there, it just tickles me because I don't even consider myself that. Hello?
Now, what would you say that is your best poem? Which out of all the poems that you've written, which is the one that you like the best?
Ooh, I don't know. I think my signature is just the first poem in the book called Southern Life. It just talks about if you want a glimpse of what Southern life is all about, and it talks about that.
Okay, and basically what you're trying to say is you're trying to help people who haven't probably been in the South to know more about the South. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I mean, and someone emailed and told me how much they loved the book, and I love what she said about it. She said, wow, you've written a love poem. You've written a love letter to the South. You know what I mean? That's the way she felt about reading the poems. It just oozes out how much I love, you know, where I come from. And most of the time you have to explain about the South. It's like, ooh, how could you love that? How could you like it? You know, there's just negativism about it. But there's positive and negative in everything and everywhere. And I do want to let people know, racism, we don't have a monopoly on that at all.
Okay, can you expand about that? What do you mean by that? Like, would you say
that is the thing we're known for is racism and those kinds of things. But I mean, I've gone to different places in the North, and I went to school in Boston, like I said, and there's a lot of it going on everywhere. So I mean, there's good and bad everywhere, but we're pegged into our history. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah.
And there's much more to us than that.
Where is the place that you would say you would consider more of a home out of all of the places that you lived?
this is always my home. It will always be my home. Like I said in the last poem of my book, it says, you know, a Mississippi Magnolia girl is all I'll ever be.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you could share possibly the first poem that you wrote that morning on February 14th that came to you with us now?
Okay, and that one, like I said, it was just a love-type poem. It wasn't about the South, and I didn't start out writing about the South, but the next is called Our Place. There is a place, our place.
Okay.
Okay. There is a place of enchanted love where only you and I do dwell, a place that's quiet and warm and safe, a place that none can tell. It's a very special private place, a place that no one knows. It's a place that we find our rest, a place of sweet repose. It's a place of tender kisses, of knowing hearts and minds, a place of wonderful delights and marvels of all kinds. It's a place where we move in a timeless rhythm, to the beat of our own drums, a place where emotions flood our souls and to which we must succumb. It carries us through a time and place where love can never end, a sacred place that's so divine where man and woman blend. It's a place I want to dwell forever, just you and me alone, a solemn place where love is shared like none has ever known.
Wow, that's beautiful. And that came to you that morning?
Absolutely, and I just scribbled it down. I didn't know the words at all. And I miss a lot of poems because if I don't write them down, I don't know them. I don't remember them. You know, they're not something that I come up with.
Right.
They just are there.
Now, how big would you say your book is? I mean, how many pages?
90 pages. I think it's 76 poems plus the introduction and the foreword and all that. It turns out to be like 90 pages.
Okay, so basically you're trying to get it out nationally as well?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be a national bestseller. I want to be on Oprah. Doesn't everyone?
Was that place about your love, or was that poem about your love for that particular place?
Oh, it was about a man. It was about love, yeah. That was about a man. Like I said, I didn't come up with the concept of this book at all, starting out with love things or about things about Mississippi. It just ended up that way. All the poems started coming about my childhood and my growing up and my dad and, you know, the things that I love about, you know, Mississippi. And that's how it came. And then the name of the book came to me just like that. We didn't make that up. It just came to me. That's what it's going to be, Reflections of the Mississippi Magnolia. But it couldn't be anything else. That's what it is.
Now, when...
A little bit about Mississippi.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Can you tell us a little bit about Mississippi?
Ooh, it's... Okay, you want me to read a couple of my poems? That's the only way I can explain it to you.
No, for somebody who never been to Mississippi, I mean, you know, you can just give us a general idea.
It's beautiful. We have some beautiful landscape, a lot of greenery, some beautiful birds, trees, and, you know, it's just a beautiful place, and nice, warm people and slow pace.
Okay.
Now, when you decided to write the book, what did you... How did you come about publishing, or are you self-published, or tell our listeners a little bit about that for those who are, you know, also contemplating writing a book. You know, what were some of the things that you went through from, you know, the first day that you wrote it down until, you know, the actual finishing?
Well, like I said, my situation is very unique because I really didn't plan to do a book or anything. It just all fell in place. It's almost like it was just meant to be. I moved home in August of 2007, and I had all these poems. I probably had about 200 or 300 in a little booklet by then, and I had shown my parents, and they were telling me, and I was asking them what they thought of it, and my friends were telling me how good they were and I should do something with them. Anyway, in December of 2007, one of my friends, who I had not seen in many years, came and did a book signing in Tupelo at Reed's Gumtree Bookstore. And he had a book called Daydreaming on My Contract, John Campbell. And so I was talking to him, and I said, John, after the book signing, I was like, I want you to look at my poems and tell me what you think about them. And he was he's a self-published author. And he said, wow, these are really good. And I wanted to get you in contact with the guy who published my book, Grant House Publishing, Mr. Grant, who lives in Jonesboro, Arkansas. He's a black publisher. So it just happened like that, like a week before. I talked to him on December 4th, 2007, and by the before Christmas, I already had my ISBN number and everything and ready to go.
Now, for those of us who don't know or who haven't written books, when you mention your ISBN number and things of that sort, I noticed also that your book is on, is that Amazon.com?
No, it's not.
So after you finished your first book and then you had some success and it seems that your momentum is picking up, how soon do you think you'll be releasing the next book?
Well, I had planned my hopes for February 2009, but I just want to see how this one goes and see how the sales, you know, are really picking up and just want to let it run its course first and then go from there. But I really want to get the second one out, but my plan is for February 2009.
And what type of marketing are you or have you been doing?
Basically, I just word of mouth and flyers and calling people and emails and all of the little networking on the computer. And believe it or not, I just learned how to log on the computer and learned how to email in January of this year. It's amazing.
You're listening to ThinkBigRadio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful. Now, can you get your information out once more so that everybody will know how to reach you? And then after that, we would like for you to tell us one of your poems that deals with Mississippi.
Yes, in general, Southern Life, that's the first poem in the book, and it just sums up about Southern Life. But my information is, if you want to read some of my poems and get some information about my background, www.blackplanet.com/PatriciaNeelyDorsey3. And to order the book, www.reeds.ms/books.asp.
Okay, great. Now, can you please just give us another one of those powerful poems?
Absolutely. I have two, Southern Life and Southern Man.
Great.
If you Southern Life, if you want a glimpse of Southern Life, come close and walk with me. I'll tell you all the simple things that you are sure to see. You'll see mockingbirds and bumblebees, magnolia blossoms and dogwood trees, caterpillars on the step, wooden porches cleanly swept, watermelons on the vine, strong majestic Georgia pines, rocking chairs and front yard swings, June bugs flying on a string, turnip greens and hot cornbread, coleslaw and barbecue, fried okra, fried corn, fried green tomatoes, fried pies and pickles too. There's ice cold tea that's syrupy sweet and cool green grass beneath your feet, catfish nipping in the lake, and fresh young boys on the make. You'll see all these things and much, much more in a way of life that I adore. Southern Man. There's nothing like a Southern man. He's a man that you should know. He's one to whom you'll find no equal anywhere you go. He has a sweet molasses talk and a slow, smooth, gliding walk. He's got strong, firm hands that let you know real work is nothing new. He has no problem with the fact that he should provide for you. There are certain kinds of values this man is sure to hold. His love of home and family is sure to not grow cold. He'll deeply love his mother. It's a bond that's always there. All throughout his life, this man will show her tender care. He's one that you can count on to do the family things. He'll change the tire and check the oil and fix the backyard swing. But underneath a tough exterior, a gentle soul lies too. He's one who rocked the baby and even cook a meal or two. On Sundays, he'll sit beside you singing on the same church pew. There's nothing like a Southern man. He's a rare and special kind. If you look forever anywhere, he's the best you'll ever find.
Well, you need to write one for the Northern man, too, because I'm from the North. And I'm quite offended that you put us on the Southern man. Have you been out North?
Yes, I have. Like I said, I have lots of relatives in Chicago, and I lived in Boston for 4 years. But there's nothing like the Southern man.
Okay.
And let me read this one, Mississippi man, even more.
I want
to enjoy my Mississippi man on a Mississippi day, soaking up some Mississippi sun. I love the way we do Mississippi things and have our Mississippi fun. He makes me laugh a Mississippi laugh and smile a Mississippi smile. And I guess if he would ask me to, I'd run a Mississippi mile.
That was nice. You know, every now and then we have a caller that calls in, and sometimes they either want to listen to the show or sometimes they just want to ask a question. We have a caller from the 773 area code. Caller, I'm going to put you on the air, and if you have a question or a comment, please make your question or your comment. State your name and where you're from. Caller, you're on.
I'm Jeanette, and I'm from Chicago. And you've done some great stuff tonight. But I got news for you. The Mississippi man is just a black man, and it doesn't make any difference where he is.
All right.
Okay, great. We've got a caller in here. She's speaking up for all of the black men.
All right. I love that because I love my black man, so I don't have any beef with that.
Okay, caller, did you have any other questions or comments?
No, I just think that you are really good and you need to keep on going.
Thank you so much.
Hey, great. That was our caller from the 773 area code. And like I say, every now and then we do get callers that call in and they make comments. Luckily, that wasn't one that didn't like you or your work.
Now, let me say something about the South and North. Can I read another little poem real quick?
Yes.
Too cold for comfort. When I went off to school in Boston, I realized why Southerners have a slower pace. When the weather's not so frigid out, there is no need to race. When the weather's nice and toasty, you can take time to slowly walk. When you don't feel you'll freeze to death, with your friends you can casually talk. Northerners don't really know what it is to take a leisurely stroll. They're always rushing here or there because the weather's just too cold.
You know what? I can definitely agree with you on that because in the winter out here in Chicago, I mean, you're just a few steps short of running when you're out in this
weather.
Oh,
I know that. I understand that from living in Boston. I'm telling you, I understood that immediately. You ain't got time for all that lingering and how you doing and standing outside. You don't have time for that. And
Gloria,
let me put in, can I put in like two or three of my little very short love poems?
Well, we're going to save some of those for a little bit later. We've got a good 45 minutes, and Gloria is just waiting to ask you something.
Okay.
Gloria?
What are the differences between the South and the North, in your opinion?
Just the pace and the pace of life, you know, and it's much simpler, and like I said, the weather. It's unbelievable. And when you say a Mississippi winter and a northern winter, it's just like 260 degrees turn. Because my brother, he went to school in Boston before I went there. He kept saying, "Cat, it's very cold. It's very cold." I'm like, "Okay, it's cold. I know what cold is." But I was judging it against a Mississippi winter. When I got to Boston, I was just like, I have got to come home. This is inhumane, and I still feel that. It's inhumane. I have issues with the weather.
Yeah, I believe you're right about that, because I've been doing a lot of Chicago weathers, like 90% of my life are those winters, and I'm just tired of it now.
It's crazy to me. I can't even understand it. I mean, mentally I can't understand it, and physically that's just off the charts. But it's just slower. It's just a slower, easier pace. That's the only way I can describe it, is slower and easier.
So you prefer it more?
Absolutely. That's not even a question. Hello? Hello?
So when do you think you want, will you be starting a second, third, fourth book, or you'll just stop at one or two books?
Well, like I said, they're already complete. I have two already done, and just I'm going to try to let this one run and see how it goes and get the feedback and try to get it out as best I can first and then let the other one go. My publisher wants to do this one in a children's book form because I do read some of these poems in the schools, and the kids love them, so I'm going to get it illustrated, maybe just take, there's like 70 poems in the book, so maybe take about 20, get them illustrated, and do it in a children's form. But I have the other two coming, which is probably be Mississippi Memories, which is like a Reflections of Mississippi Magnolia 2, basically, and the other one is, like I said, The Secret Garden of Love, and I have all those poems already, they're already done.
Now, you stated that you used to live in Memphis. How long did you live in Memphis?
19 years.
Yeah. Did you enjoy Memphis?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so, but you decided to move to Mississippi.
I have a 9-year-old son. I'm an old mama because I'm 44 years old, and I didn't have my son until I was like 35, so that's an old mom. And people would always ask, is that your grandbaby? I'm like, no, unfortunately, I'm just an old mama. But my parents were getting older. They're in their late 70s, and I needed to move home to kind of help them out with some things. And my son, Memphis, was kind of getting a little rowdy up there as far as a young black boy growing up. So we wanted him to come down to a slower, easier pace so he wouldn't have to watch his back all the time and things like that.
Well, that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. So Mississippi is totally different from Memphis.
Oh, yes. It's still southern, but it's totally different than Tupelo, Mississippi, even though it's just an hour and a half away. Well, hour and 15 minutes, but it's totally different.
So how have you found the market for your book?
Oh, it's been the reception has been wonderful. I mean, people are loving it. I'm just very pleased, and it just warms my heart every time. I mean, both races and ages. I mean, it's just wonderful. I mean, the kids love it from age 9 on up, and then the older people really love it because I talk about stuff that people have forgotten about in the South. I know y'all don't know anything about this stuff, but I've got stuff in there about hog killing time and shooting peas and making cracklings and stuff like that we know about, people over 40.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something to remember. The kids, you know, the younger kids don't know anything about it, so it's wonderful to have it in the book. And they're wow, and like Party Line. They don't remember that kind of stuff when three or four different people's phones were hooked up on one line. You know, stuff like that. I have a poem about that.
Uh-huh.
You know, they don't remember those things.
Yeah, the regular dial phone, you have to dial.
Right, absolutely. And so they just love it. They learn new stuff, but then the older people, especially over 50 and 60, they just love it because it's just stuff they remember.
Yeah. So basically what you're trying to do is bring back memories, a lot
absolutely,
of memories.
Absolutely. And like I said, I didn't try to do it. They just all came to me like that, and it just made a neat little package of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just talked about my life, and it came together as a life in poems. And I talk about my dad. I have one called The Country Doctor, My father was the only black doctor in the town for many, many years. And when I was a little girl, and way back then, he used to make house calls, and we'd go way deep in the country and go into people's houses and, you know, in the fields and all that kind of stuff. So I've lived a very interesting life.
So you basically elaborate on a lot of things like that in the book. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Now, how do you feel about, like, children? What about the reception with children? How does children...
They love it. I go to the elementary schools and read, and they ask a lot of questions. But then I'm thinking something about the South. We all have this same understanding. There's this, like, this common thread. If they haven't lived it, they know about it. They've heard about it because we love to talk, and we love to tell stories in the South. We sit around and talk about, I remember when, and my grandmama said this and that and things like that. So the kids still relate to the stuff I'm talking about, you know. And then older people say, you're too young to know that stuff. You're too young to have lived that. And I'm like, no, we've lived the same life. From 7 to 70, I'm telling you, we've had the same life. And I have a poem that both the kids and the older people love. It's called The Rules. And it talks about the rules we Southerners are taught and learn from really young, you know.
Can you explain a little bit about that?
Just how you say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, and yes, sir, and no, sir, close this, open that, you know. You want me to read it really quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
The rules. Most Southern folks have rules we're taught from when we're very young, and most of us throughout our lives to these rules have clung. Life can be much easier when you know what to do or not, and you're sure to learn a lot of them if Southern parents you have got. One of the first rules you come to know is children are to be seen and not heard. It's best if you sit down somewhere quietly as a bird. You always say please when you're asking and thank you when you receive. You address all your elders as ma'am or sir, and if you don't do it, you'll grieve. Don't touch anything in the store. Keep your hands to yourself. If it's not something you plan to buy, leave it soundly on the shelf. Always say good morning soon after you awake. And always greet people pleasantly if friends you are to make. Don't slam a door as you walk out. You don't live in a barn. You'd better close it gently, is what they'd always warn. If you open a cabinet or anything, always close it back. Once you do it repeatedly, you'll always have the knack. Don't call anyone before 8 a.m. or after 10 at night. If it's something you feel that you must do, it's an urge that you must fight. Never ask for food when you visit, although the host may ask. Sometimes it's best if you decline and let the moment pass. These are just a very few of the things we Southerners are taught. Without some rule for every occasion, we are never caught.
You're listening to ThinkBigRadio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful. Can you please get out your information? And before you do that, I would like to commend you on just writing that poem, because those are the types of rules that a lot of us should live by, and those are actually the type of rules that made us what we are today. They're
old-fashioned,
they're right to the point, and I might have a small issue about turning down food, but other than that, I think everything was on the right track. How can they reach you?
www.blackplanet.com/Patricia Neely Dorsey 3. And to buy the book, www.reeds.ms/books.ast.
Gloria, you are doing so well. I'm going to let you continue.
Oh, I'm going to let you go ahead. You go ahead.
No, Gloria, you go ahead now.
No,
sometimes
you go ahead.
These little spats on the radio, but it's all in good fun.
No, you
I know
go ahead.
Now,
I'm fine.
She's investigating everything about you.
What?
I say Gloria's investigating everything about the book and everything, and she hasn't
said
anything bad, so I know you're a good person.
All right.
Lori, I'll tell you.
Wonderful.
I'm trying to keep a visitor kind of quiet, so that's why I said, you know, I prefer you to go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So all right, I understand that.
Uh-huh.
All right, speaking of visitors, and I remember you talking about your family. You have a 14-year-old, correct?
I have a 9-year-old son, Henry.
Oh, he's
and
nine.
I have a poem in the book about Henry. He's a know-it-all. He knows everything. If you got any questions in your life or problems, you need to ask my son, because he got the answer to everything.
He's nine?
Nine.
Where do they start? Because I think I've met a four-year-old who, I think, this guy knew everything. And not
right.
only that, he was actually the vice president of a daycare, which he was a part of being watched in.
Right.
It was just amazing. He told me, he said, I don't know
right.
these extra kids what I'm going to do, because it's hard enough watching these.
Right. I mean, even when he was 5 and 6, he'd be telling, I said, well, how do you know everything? Well, I've been doing this since I was a baby. I was like, you're still a baby.
But they're grown. These children, they are very, very, very intelligent, believe me.
Yes.
Yeah, because I got a grandbaby, and, you know, that's my little visitor. She looked at me in my mouth. That's why I said, you know, I got a little visitor.
Right, right,
and they,
right.
You know, they are, whoo.
It's true.
They are very, very intelligent.
Yes.
And that's really good that he's like that.
It is.
It's
yes,
really
it
good
is.
That he's like that, because you know why? He's not afraid to say what speak his mind.
Absolutely.
That
absolutely.
Way he can get far in life. You know, that's the only
absolutely.
Way you can get far in life. You gotta try.
I love that.
Oh, yeah.
Love that, because he's a free thinker and he's an independent thinker, and I love it.
Does he read a lot?
He loves to read, and I told him he made me happy in the work. He told me when he was 5, he was like, Mama, I just love to read. I love books, and I just want to get some ideas. Main thing that I wanted out of my child, we have like 1,000 books in our house. I make sure we have books everywhere. And when he told me that, I was just so elated.
Is it possible you can read us a poem, maybe from one of your new works that's coming out that's dealing with the relationship you have with your son or the know-it-all characteristic?
Absolutely. Hold on. Let me get to that. I'm sorry. I don't have it right in front of me. Let me see. Okay, Henry. It talks about where his name comes from, and then it says the know-it-all. Henry is the one poem called, My son's name is Henry. It's the only name he could be. He looks and talks and acts just like a Henry to me. His grandfather's name is Henry, and his uncle's a Henry, too. Three of his great-grandfathers are Henry, too. He had a great-uncle Henry. He's one we can't forget. And I'm sure on down the line there are other Henrys yet. I hope that Henry will wear with pride this name that is his lot and always hold most dear to him the strong heritage that he's got. Know it all, he thinks. My son, Henry Dorsey, knows about everything there is, he thinks. If a question needs an answer, the right one is always his, he thinks. Please don't try to argue, because he is always right. He thinks. You can never sway him from his view if you try with all your might. No matter what the subject, he can tell you right away all you need to know about anything on any given day. Henry's got to be the smartest boy the world has ever known, has ever seen, because he has the answer to everything, and he's not yet in his teens.
That I like that, and I like how you say he thinks, because to me it sounds like he thinks big.
Absolutely. He does. He does, and I love it.
Now, what would be the best advice you could give to our listeners who are listening in now, who maybe want to write a book or maybe want to start a business, because it's actually a business that you started once you wrote your book. So what's the best advice you could give to our listeners?
preparation. There was a quote that I read. It says, luck is preparation meets opportunity. So you have to be ready. First of all, as far as a writer, you need to read all the time and write all the time. So you can always, you know, just write whatever it is. Get it out there. Don't be afraid. Write and read a lot so you'll know what's going on and that words will be easy for you and that words will flow. But the main thing I say is persistence. Don't give up. My two key words in life are hope and believe. You know, you hope and you believe in what it is you're doing and just keep up with it.
That's true, and you got to fight.
Absolutely.
You gotta never give up.
Never give up.
And hard work don't ever
That is a biblical principle. You can knock down doors and people will open doors if you keep on ordering them enough. You know, I never take no for an answer. I'm telling you, I've had so many doors trying to close on me, and, you know, it just happens. It opens up after you keep on knocking, baby. It's will open. Knock and the door will be open. And people laugh at me all the time because I'm like, I tell them these old Southern kind of, you know, quotations. It's like the squeaky wheel gets the oil. Do you hear me? Because I can squeak, squeak, squeak. Mm-hmm. And a closed mouth don't get fed. Those are my two things to live by.
Now, Patricia, I want to ask you, what was one of the biggest challenges that you faced that advice that you just gave us kept you going? What was a challenge?
Oh, being technically challenged, I'm telling you, I didn't know how to talk to the computer, period, until January of 2008. I mean, I didn't even know how to log into it. I didn't know how to email. And, you know, everything is done with your publisher and with people by emails and faxing and all this stuff. And, I mean, I just came into the 21st century. I am way behind. So I'm catching up, though. I mean, this is a new world to me, and I'm loving it. My publisher demanded, Patricia, you've got to learn how to email. You have to learn how to send these things, you know, put them on disk and send them. Oh, so I had to learn all that.
Wow. Now, we're rolling down to our last few minutes, and
okay.
We just make sure that you get out to all of the people that you want to thank for, you know, making your book possible and just, you know, thank in general.
Oh, my book is dedicated to my parents, Dr. and Mrs. James Neely. They provided me with a wonderful fairy tale life, and they have given me the best life that parents could ever give, and I say that they gave to me the best things that a parent can give a child, roots and wings. And then I want to thank my husband, James Dorsey. He's been beside me since then, and he's always supportive, and he always wants me to do the right thing. So, and to John Campbell, who I acknowledge in the book, that he wanted me to make this dream come true for me because he really pushed me to say that, you know, get it out there, and he introduced me to the publisher, and the rest is history. And to my son, for making what real true love is. I mean, I thought I knew love was until I had a child, and I never wanted to have a child. And when I had him, I now know what real unconditional love is all about.
And we would definitely like to thank you for taking the time out of your day to come on thinkbigradio.com and share your story and your insights. Gloria, did you have anything?
Just like to say thank you for being on the show tonight.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
Thank you
for even listening.
You're welcome.
And go out and get that book somewhere. Go to the bookstore and ask for it. You can't remember the information that I gave you, but try to go to black/divorce and try to go to www.reads.ms and get that book.
Okay.
You're listening to thinkbigradio.com. Where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful. Thank you, ThinkBigRadio.com listeners, for tuning in to another great interview. Be sure to listen in live Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, where we'll have a big thinker that cover many topics, especially the topics that you are interested in, business. entertainment, financials, networking, you name it, thinkbigradio.com has it. Think big, everyone, and have a big night.
Thank you.